Namaste. So, one of the problems that we face in when we take to spiritual life is that the words that have been uttered, they've been uttered with a specific sense and they are born out of an inner experience. But we don't have that experience. So, we understand those words with reference to our own experience. It's like if somebody saw a swan, I give this example, and suddenly wanted to communicate this to another person, you know what a swan is. And it's communicating to someone who has never seen a swan, doesn't know what a swan is. So he'll say white in color, it's got lovely wings, etc. So he may well take it to be a, in his mind, a picture may come of a kingfisher. Or maybe a duck. So, something like this has always happened with spiritual life, and every word that has been uttered has been defiled by the human mind and corrupted by its users and even adherents. And it's true of many words. I could just go on and on, there would be a whole class on this. For instance, when someone asked Kabir about Rama, so we have all this now about Rama. Who is Ram? So he writes very interestingly. He says, Ek Ram Dasarath ka beta. There is one Ram which I know who is the son of Dasarath. Ek Ram hai Jagat Pasara. I know another Ram who dwells, who is universal in his consciousness. Ek Ram Ghat Ghat ka vasi. There is a Ram which dwells in every atom of existence. Ek Ram hai sabse nyara. There is another Ram who transcends. So all these four Rams are together in that Dasharatha son is embodiment of all these. But ordinarily we don't understand the other three because it's too vast for the human conception. God, why this word? What has happened to this word God? We need not talk about it. All kinds of meanings have been put into it. Even yesterday I was discussing, somebody has asked me that, you know, people have said mother will punish and, you know, if you get married, if you don't remain a bachelor and you completely don't join the ashram, then you are not doing this yoga. That means your surrender is not complete. Now all these are our conceptions in the head. And mother has cautioned against making a religion of Sri Aurobindo, which people will try to make a cruel and merciless religion. That's how she has expressed. In the name of the supramental. So they pick up something from here and there and make a whole religion. Now why this background? Because we are going to enter into this chapter 12, the significance of sacrifice. So the word sacrifice immediately evokes certain meanings in our head. So there are people who do animal sacrifice, there are people who sacrifice their hairs, there are people who light a fire and put some home, etc. And they call it sacrifice. But if you ask the mother, she says very interestingly that, you know, and Sri Aurobindo says, sacrifice is not self-immolation. It's not diminishing, not cutting off something. Sacrifice is self-refinement, self-divinization, if you want to put it. It's a process of transformation. So, in Sanskrit, the Sanskrit word is yajna, which comes from the root yaj. From there comes yajanti, yajman, yajurved, all this comes from there. So yaj, if we go to the root, it means to offer, to worship, to purify. It has nothing to do with external fire. But why? Fire has the same property. When you offer something to the fire, it consumes. It is the one power which will ultimately can consume anything and everything. At the same time, it will refine, it will purify. Also, it will uplift things. So in the Vedic lore, always language was used at once at the pragmatic as well as the psychological level, spiritual level. It had a double sense. And Sri Aurobindo describes this in great detail in Secret of the Vedas. He says why they did it, partly because one is that this knowledge was kept reserved for those who are ready, for the initiates. Because otherwise people will distort it. Even today we have all kinds of yajna goes on despite Sri Krishna's reminding us what really yajna is. But we do it, all kinds of things in the name of yajna. So also because Sanskrit language has this beauty that it can be used like that. But even in a normal life, we use words when we have to convey psychological experience. For instance, when we say, oh, beauty like the moon. If you ask the moon, what is beautiful about the moon? A hardcore scientist will say, what's beautiful about the moon? But you feel the sense of a beauty. Moon associated with delight. Somebody would say it's just a piece of rock. So words have been used in certain sense. But every time their sense either gets distorted or gets diminished to a very, very outward level. And every time when this happens, there is a dharma siglani. I keep saying Shri Krishna uses the word yada yada hi dharma siglani. He doesn't use the word yada yada hi adharmam. Adharma is different. Dharma siglani means something which was valid at one point of time, loses its relevance, loses its strength or power within it. It degenerates, glani, it declines. And men who use that same language or they when they use the same practices, the spirit has gone out of it, shell remains. And Shivindu cautions that this is what has happened to religions where truth has receded into the secrecy of its silence. So the word yajna, Shivindu takes great detail too, because he's on the Gita, as to what this word means. So there he brings in first the Gita itself describes that yajna, some people do yajna for satisfying their desires. Even now, and we can relate it to anything, we can go to the divine always for only satisfying our desires. But some do it for the highest good. So highest good was considered mukti, which is freedom from ignorance. Moksha is not about freedom from the cycles of birth. Or still higher, for a complete union with the Brahman consciousness. So the Gita makes a distinction between the Vedism, which is purely ritualistic, and the Vedanta, which is more about the inner journey. So ritualistic sacrifices people engaged in with ceremonial practices, they were meant, they used to do it with the idea of gaining favors. We have already spoken about it. Gaining favors from the gods for all kinds of things, from progeny to house to wealth and etc. etc. But the Gita clearly says, if you go into that, you are prone to the cycle of birth and rebirth through ignorance. Basically, you continue remaining tied to the ignorance. Even if you go to a paradise, you come back. So you are caught up in the same cycle of ignorance, which means your life will be full of the duality of pleasure and pain. You can't help it. If you seek pleasure in life, pain will come chasing you. And it's a grace. Otherwise, one will get completely locked inside the bubble of pleasure. But divine wants us to grow into infinite, so pleasure is very often a deception and pain comes to liberate us from that little cage. So this is one thing which he explains. And then he says, but this does not lead to the highest good. So then people started drawing meanings and some said, okay, highest good will come if you continue to do the same ceremonial offerings, but now instead of doing it for material riches, you do it for highest good. So they won't leave the outer yajna. So they said, okay, you can do the same yajna, light up a fire, offer things and say that you are aspiring for moksha. So Shri Krishna explains now what yajna is. So he says, some offering, giving oneself, some offer into the fires of the senses through self-control. This language. So surely he's not saying that light up a fire outside and you know, you offer your senses means now I'll watch only this fire, hear only the mantras going on. That means that instead of an unrestrained, undisciplined flow of senses, when we restrain them. So when we restrain the senses, this is one kind of yajna where instead of rushing into the objects, we are doing self-control. So by this self-control, the fire increases. He is giving us the process. Then self-control further. The senses offer themselves to further on to the mind, buddhi and finally to the Brahman. So ultimately, when we understand that whatever we are offering, this offering is anyways going to the Supreme Divine. So he gives us that great meaning that constantly nature is doing a yajna, and this yajna, she is offering all her actions to the Divine. And it is very easy to understand it, because we may think, no, I am going to sacrifice it for sake of my relatives, my family. But if we look at life, it never happens and it never will happen that whatever you have given for whosoever and whatsoever, you will get back in proportion. Many times you will not get back anything. So it's interesting. Why it happens? Because this world is governed by the law of sacrifice. Sacrifice means it's like a, what is it called, potluck, or everybody puts. And then you draw. What is meant for you will come to you. So you can't claim that I have put this much and this much will come back to me. This, because this world is governed by the law of sacrifice. That's what is there in Indian custom of prasad, where everybody comes together, cooks. But when you actually take it, it's not like, okay, he has put more effort, let me give him more. Everybody gets it. So the Gita describes it in a very beautiful way, which many people find difficult to understand. So he says that, Shri Krishna says that by rains, by yajna, rain comes. And this rain impels the annam, the food to grow. Then by food, we are impelled to work. And this work extends itself into Brahman. So the language looks very strange. People believe that by doing outer yajna, rain will come. Well, it can come. There are occult processes. I know, I have a friend of mine who actually made Varuni Yantra, where he would burn certain chemicals. It's like cloud seeding. But that's not what is being said here. It is to describe the entire cycle where everything is intertwined with everything else. And ultimately it all goes back to the Divine. I think last time I spoke about the story of Draupadi, where the last grain of rice. And this, what in an interaction with children, the child suddenly comes up and says, oh, in everything, everything is included. So when you eat a morsel of food, so many kind of efforts have gone into it. And people who have put in the effort, they are not enjoying this, they are enjoying something else. Something else comes to them. So for a person who is engaging in spiritual life, the rule is he should eat the leftover of the yajna. So this leftover is, there is a whole story in Upanishad that a Brahmin was eating and some grains of food were spilt on the soil, and one squirrel went there and rolled into it, and the squirrel goes into the yajna which Yudhishthir is conducting, and it laughs. He says, what kind of he thinks he's doing something great. He says, no, your yajna is so much inferior to that Brahmin from whose house I am coming. He said, why? He says, see, I rolled in that dust and I have got this golden hue over me. So he doesn't understand, because he is giving so much more. So that's where comes the attitude, to whom we are offering it, for what purposes we are offering. So this whole thing is to remind us that basically whatever we are giving, whether it be inner life, outer life, we should give it only to the Divine and be ready to receive, happy to receive, willing to receive whatever comes from the Divine. And receive it with a sense of gratitude. In short, this is what yajna is about. And those who do not do it, who want to grab, supposing I have put more effort in our practical situation, supposing somebody has put more effort, let's say in an ashram or in Auroville, let's put it like that. You have put more effort. And suddenly you see somebody else has become the head of department. I'm sorry to use this. I see this all the time, you know. And you say, oh, this person? Inwardly it is, I am more deserving. But it's like, how come this person has been given that? I have put in so much of labor. Now when we do it, that entire yajna was wasted. Why? Because all the time hidden within was an ambition. That's why when we do it, things with an ambition, many people say, oh, I've been in the ashram, I've been doing so much, but why nothing is happening? Because concealed behind everything was a state of ambition which comes out. It comes out during such moments. But if you have done it only for the sake of the divine, you may not get that chair, and it doesn't matter. Probably you will get more work, but definitely you will get an inner contact with the divine, growth in the divine, which is the real purpose of yajna. So he says that very clearly, and now we'll read how beautifully the passages are. So first, these two ideals. One is the ideal where we put in effort, offer, do the yajna for the sake of material goods. The significance of sacrifice, page 114. Fostered by sacrifice, the God shall give you desired enjoyments. Who enjoys their given enjoyments and has not given to them, he is a thief. So sometime back, even in ashram, people had started. So they had started a movement called Sri Aurobindo Ashram Beneficiaries Association. So, of course, there was a mindset coming from the so-called, you know, sometimes very leftist orientation. We are the ones who are working. We are not having the enjoyment. Special privileges are given to so-called VIPs. Why we are not getting? I said, this is means you are not here for yoga. What somebody else is getting is not at all the concern, should not be the concern of someone who is truly engaged in yoga. The only concern is whether one is growing in the divine consciousness or not. There is no other concern. So even we may be living in an ashram or Auroville, but we may be ultimately doing it for material enjoyments. So that's where one has to be so careful. And here he says he is a thief. Sri Aurobindo, when he earns 750 rupees, Maharaja Baroda, he says, up till now, I think I have been living like a thief because I keep only, I give only 2 annas to God and keep 14 annas to myself. Now, what does it mean giving to God in actual life? We will read it. The good who eat what is left from the sacrifice are released from all sin. Meaning thereby, you wait. What has to come to you will come as your share. It may be a very small amount pittance. And you may not feel, you may still go hungry. But what has happened is that you are released from all evil doing. And very naturally, all this evil doing springs from greed, from wanting to have more, from lust. So all that will automatically go away. But evil are they and enjoy sin who cook the food for their own sake. The whole idea of sin is changed. People who live only for their selfish needs and greeds are, and if we look at this world, if you go back to the root of sin, selfishness and meanness. From there springs everything else. From there springs fear. From there springs need to appropriate. From there springs the greed, possess at several levels. So he says that, well, evil are they and enjoy sin who cook for their own sake. From food creatures come into being. From rain is the birth of food. From sacrifice comes into being the rain. Sacrifice is born of work. So here is completely, what is sacrifice? Sacrifice is this work we are doing. Work is not only physical but intellectual, emotional at different levels. All effort is a sacrifice in the sense it is going out of us. But where is it going? Very often it is going, this sacrifice we are doing, but doing it, it is returning back to the belly, our own belly and the belly of a few. So this is where he is reminding us that this is evil. Work know to be born of Brahman, meaning thereby that we should not create a distinction between work and the divine. Its origin is divine. So if you look at it practically, what it means is original impulsion of work in creation is the divine's. By the time it reaches us, the spirit of selfishness and appropriation comes in. And that's how the divine will get deflected. So the mother says in one of her prayers, each time a great being has accepted to do your work, he wants to keep something of that energy for himself. If nothing else, people want to be appreciated. They want to be acknowledged. They want to be revered and recognized. Oh, he is a saintly person. And these things are very subtle. And she says each time a being incarnates. So this asuric tendency comes in. And it original divine impulsion, if one could live by that, it's such a freedom, such a joy. You don't have to worry about tomorrow. You don't have to worry about people. What people will think or say and what will happen. Nothing. Look at Sri Aurobindo himself. Did he ever bother what people are calling him, not calling him? When he was denied the Nobel Prize, the mother said, thank God they would have put him into the another category of Nobel laureates. So he lived. Whatever comes, he receives it. But he's not doing with the idea of getting anything for himself. So work, know to be born of Brahman. Brahman is born of the immutable. Therefore is the all-pervading Brahman established in the sacrifice. So this is one kind of life he's explaining to us. Even when you live for the lower thing, it is ultimately being governed by Brahman. And this is a natural corrective in this world. Nobody with all his efforts can live only selfishly. It's just impossible. Nature will recoil, it will hit back, strike back, because ultimately it is all going to Brahman, from where the results come pouring in, and they don't go according to our calculation. So the next is down below. Krishna proceeds to state the superiority of the spiritual man to works. But the man whose delight is in the self and who is satisfied with the enjoyment of the self, and in the self he is content, for him there exists no work that needs to be done. So again, when this comes, people say, okay, so no work needs to be done. That same thing we have been discussing. So this is a state. When doing everything, you are doing nothing. Again and again you have to get that. And one example that I often see as an image is that when a wheel is moving, it's moving in a direction, it's moving towards something. So it's action. Motion is an action. Now you can be either identify with the spokes of the wheel or with the rim of the wheel, in which you get the sense of the movement. Or you can be identified constantly with the center of the wheel. When you are in the center of the wheel, still there is action and still there is motion, but you are free. So the center of this creation is divine. Center of the individual is divine. When we are turned to the divine, joined with the divine, then the state is that though works are done, in fact, much more powerfully. Because that is the origin of the movement. Because there is the center of the wheel, therefore it is spinning. That's the power, that's the fulcrum. And if you are identified with the center, even though you are engaging now in a very powerful action, yet inwardly you are living in a state as if there is no action. In fact, there is no action. And therefore there are no consequences of action. So we can either be, and the more we are on the surface, the more we'll feel the crush and the crashing, and we will feel, oh, I am doing so much. But see what has happened. I am being crushed by the earth below. Because we are on the surface. So when we live on the surface, we feel the crash and crush of the flow of life. When we are in the center, even of a storm, if you are on the center, you don't feel anything. In the fire, if you are in the center, many people, when they light up, from one candle to another, they don't know this, so they feel if they put the whole candle onto the wick, it will burn fast. The center of a flame is, it will not burn. You have to do it from the surface. If you don't know this, you'll see the difference of the color. You try doing it. It's very interesting. So this is there in the entire creation. At the center is that state where everything is flowing from it, but itself is unaffected by anything. So that's what he's reminding us. So Sri Aurobindo clarifies that what is the ground of reconciliation. Page 115, the practical advice to all of us. Therefore, without attachment, perform ever the work that is to be done. So what is the work to be done? What it meant by God's work? So why should he work? So all these ideas may come in. So Sri Krishna makes it very simple. Done for the sake of the world, Lok Sangraha, as is made clear immediately afterward. So there is the world done selfishly, and there is the world work which is done to carry the world forward in its march of civilization. So this is the two kinds of ideals before us. For by doing work without attachment, man attains to the highest. Simple. Attachment to the fruits, attachment to the work. No, I will do this work only. If that work goes away from me, oh my God, I have been deprived so many years. I have worked here, that famous story where this man had worked to build a church, and after building the church, he was of course a member, and one day they said, no, you are a black person, you have to go to another church. So he was very sad. And sitting in the church, he was thinking that, why this has happened to me? I have done so much to make this church come up, and see what is happening to me today. And then it seems Christ appears. He says, what makes you sad, son? He says, see, they have cast me out of this church where I gave so much of all my effort, money, everything. And he says, come, you are in good company. They have cast me out many years back. So this is how it is. So he reminds us to do it without attachment. For it was even by works that Janak and the rest attained to perfection. So he's then giving example that look, if you do it without attachment, attachment to the fruits and attachment to the work, whatever position, whatever work, and if we look at the life of people in the ashram, that's how it has always been. There was a person who was very well, very apparently very well read, knowledgeable person, as we would say, and he was given the work of dusting the books in the library. Later on, this person ultimately went away because, that ambition is a very big thing when the lure came from government. But it was mother's way of bringing humility. On the other hand, Ved Prakashji, he was a professor in economics and he was given work in dining room. So people told him, oh, your real value, I think nobody understands in the ashram that you are, given this kind of work. So he said, no, mother knows it correctly, fully. See, I am an economist and we must economize the food that we are taking. He said it very humorously. I remember when I had come first, so some people, friends from the ashram, I was coming to Auroville for one of the talks in Bharat Nivas, and few people were sitting with me. I had no clue, new person, new entrant, so they were asking me, where are you working? I said, I have not yet. I have to just, start something, and right now I'm sitting in the society, but I want to join the ashram. Oh, I know, they will just immediately send you to dining room. I was shocked. I said, what's wrong with that? I immediately felt, what's wrong with that? Whatever work is given to you, this is the basic of karma yoga. But I didn't say anything, of course. But I understood that the lesser you speak, the better it is. Because it was based on the idea that if I am giving talks, if I am writing books, you are sitting in a chair in an air-conditioned room, signing checks, then you are doing some great work. But if you are washing utensils in the dining room, you are not great. But this is so foolish. See, Mirabai went to, she is a princess. Where does she go for Brahmagyan? She goes to a person who is mending shoes. Sant Rai Das. So when he sees her, he says, because she's a princess, says, you really want to, people will laugh at you. I am a cobbler. She says, doesn't matter. To me, you are a Brahmagyani. Then he gives her, initiates her into that kind of bhakti. So this idea of big work, small work, this is what I must do because I have been trained like that. All this must go. So no attachment to, not only to result, but to work. So when we do it with that idea, then we get the supreme good. The whole sense and drift of this teaching, page 115, the last paragraph, turns upon the interpretation we are to give to the important words, yajna, karma, brahma, sacrifice, work, brahman. If the sacrifice is simply the Vedic sacrifice, if the work from which it is born is the Vedic rule of works, and if the Brahman from which the work itself is born is the Shabda Brahman in the sense only of the letter of the Veda, then all the positions of the Vedic dogma are conceded and there is nothing more. So Veda themselves, Shurvindu reminds us, is not a book. It is there in the book, but you have to go beyond the written word. Veda is that real knowledge. which is engraved in matter, which is there in the entire creation, to discover that knowledge by whatever means, then we are a knower of the Veda and a knower of Brahman. So, ceremonial sacrifice is the right means of gaining children, wealth, enjoyment. By ceremonial sacrifice, rain is brought down from heaven and the prosperity and continuity of the race assured. Life is a continual transaction between the gods and men, in which man offers ceremonial gifts to the gods from the gifts they have bestowed on him, and in return is enriched, protected, fostered. So this is what we see. You go to a temple, from there come these practices that I'll offer so many rupees worth of, you know, sweets to the gods. See, we have been giving so much sweets to all the gods. The result is they have given us diabetes, you know, naturally. It is their way of reminding, stop this practice. As a child, I used to wonder, why can't we offer samosa? Because, you know, I was very fond of it. I said, why can't I offer? No, you have to give only sweets. So, you know, you go to, and then after giving that little gift, sometimes so ugly, 5 rupees, those days 5 rupees, huh? Now 500 rupees, and then you want your name to be written. Somebody asked mother that, you know, somebody wants to offer a big sum. We all know the names of these big houses. And what should we do? All that they want is their name to be written on one of the stones. You will see the crudest display and vulgar display when you see the names of people who have donated for a temple written on the somewhere, even inaugurated by so and so. This is nothing to do with spirituality, but still it used to be done. Nowhere you will find inaugurated by Sri Aurobindo, inaugurated by Sri Krishna, but all kinds of people are doing this. So the mother said, let the person give the money. If they want the name to be written, write it on a tile and put it on the floor. Obviously, the person backed off, because everybody will step on that. Are you ready to have, do you have that kind of humility? This is a money which has you have received from the divine. You are giving, even if you were to give all, still it is not yours. It never was yours. So, he is reminding that this is the lower kind of life. Therefore, all human works have to be accompanied and turned into a sacrament by ceremonial sacrifice and ritualistic worship. So this is how people have interpreted it. Even the seeker of liberation has to continue to do ceremonial sacrifice. Although without attachment, it is by ceremonial sacrifice and ritualistic works done without attachment that men of the type of Janak attain to spiritual perfection and liberation. He is saying this is how people believe. This is not what Sri Krishna is saying. He says people say, okay, we will no more do it for earthly good, we will do it for the liberation. But same rituals, sacrifice. And Sri Aurobindo reminds us, write the next line below. Obviously, this cannot be the meaning of the Gita, for it would be in contradiction with all the rest of the book. So what is the word which will contradict it? One of them is Brahman, from which all work is born. And Veda as to a symbolical sense in which the creative word is identical with the all-pervading Brahman. So creative word here is not just a book, but the all-pervading Brahman from whom many, many Vedas can emerge. So when we say that Vedas as a book is the ultimate truth, we are doing the same mistake that certain religions end up doing and saying this is the first and last word and nothing can be written, nothing can be altered, no fresh revelation can take place. And people do the same thing now with Sri Aurobindo. That whatever is there is already there in the Indian scriptures. And so often you have to remind them. They even try to make a comparison. So they make a comparison that is psychic being the same as Sharobhav or the Sharpurusha. Well, Sharpurusha is the divine presence which is everywhere in the mutable becoming. Psychic being is specific to earth. But we find it very difficult to admit that there are new things which have been discovered, because the last page of the Veda is not yet written, can never be written, because it is infinite. So the moment you catch it in a book and say that is it, that means you have turned the infinite into finite. This is a mistake religions have done, and at least the Sanatana Dharma should not do it. That's why Sri Aurobindo's message meets a resistance, because they want to understand it, they are happy as long as they feel it is the same thing which Krishna says, same thing which Veda says, same thing which even Gandhiji says, for God's sake. But the moment you say, no, there is something new, this is the base, but something new. No, 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 that's your interpretation. So this is the mistake that we should not do, because the creative word is identical with the all-pervading Brahman, the eternal, the one self present in all existence, sarva bhuteshu, and present in all the workings of the existence. The Veda is the knowledge of the divine, the eternal. Can we capture it in any book? Beautiful one line from, of course that line probably we must have heard, when the great poet says that even if you were to make ink out of all the oceans and pen out of all the trees and all matter as a book, you cannot write the guna of Hari. So the other day I was seeing, somebody had posted, what does the word Ma mean? But by doing this, Ma is Ma. There is a letter of Sri Aurobindo where he says, someone says that with your name we like to, write something, and Mahaguru, Maharishi, etc., etc. He says, pure and simple Sri Aurobindo. Now this name, just imagine, Sri Aurobindo name contains in it the whole universe and beyond. But how is this going to be disclosed to us? Only if we meditate upon him. Then you discover Sri Aurobindo everywhere and in everything. Ma, even more. So Ma, you will go to the origin of creation. Evidently, because the moment you meditate on the word Ma, can you confine yourself to a word meaning? Or only the mother in Sri Aurobindo Ashram Pondicherry? She is the origin of creation, Ma, from where the infinite becomes finite. So when we meditate upon these truths, so similarly the Veda is not just a book to be written and finished. It is the all-pervading Brahman. I am he who is to be known in all the books of the knowledge. So there are those who believe that by knowing the Vedas, by reading the Vedas, by reading the Upanishads, by commenting upon these scriptures or even the Gita, they become knower of the divine. But Sri Aurobindo says in Synthesis of Yoga that you may intellectually know all that has been said of the eternal, yet you may not know the eternal. But the moment one has the humility that I don't know, I may have read everything and I don't know, then when the eternal reveals it, something very, you will find it in the Vedas, Upanishads, in the Gita, you'll find it in the babble of a child, you'll find it in the whisper of the flower, you'll find it in the breeze, you'll find everywhere. So this is how we have to proceed. This is what Sri Krishna reminds us. So if we live like that, it is the knowledge of him in the workings of Prakriti, in the workings of the three gunas, first qualities or modes of nature, Traigunya Vishya Veda. So even when we study a subject, we can study it from the yogin's point of view. Sri Aurobindo describes that in great detail. You are studying history, geography, science. Try to understand how the divine, because everything has emerged from there, how he is working into it. And then it becomes a marvel. Ashcharyavat Pashyati Kashchidena. But if you study it the way limited laws and formulas and processes, then you miss that point. So that's how he reminds us. Samam Brahman. That's why even one can, that famous line of Blake, eternity in the palm of hand. So if one can look at a grain of sand, and the mother writes in one of her prayers that even a smallest grain of sand can be an occasion for thy worship. And she writes at one place very beautifully that she says that someone had read, was recounting her a conversation with Swami Vivekananda. So the person was saying he was admiring nature. And of course she repeatedly says, I don't know whether this story is true or not, but that person recounted it like that. And when he said, oh, how beautiful nature is. And Swami Vivekananda admonished him, if you admire nature, how are you going to find God? And she says, always it has seemed to me that this is a limitation of the human consciousness. You can look at a grain of sand, you can look at a shell, you can look at an action of a human being, a human action, you can look at a thought, A word spoken, a building, that's how Golkund, yoga in the material world. And you can enter into contact with the divine, because ultimately all works has proceeded from the divine and goes back to him. So if we live with that consciousness, world of course, but then India will be great. If we don't live with that consciousness, go back to that kind of ritualism, then we can forget about. You have to live with, that's how they created a civilization. It was not a civilization where God was shut in a temple or in a church and, you know, with a ritualistic prayer. No, he's everywhere and in everything. And all works proceed from him. For all the working of Prakriti is in its true nature a sacrifice, yajna, with the divine being as the enjoyer of all energisms and works and sacrifice and the great lord of all existences. Bhoktaram yajna tapasam tapasam sarva loka maheshwara. And to know this divine all pervading and established in sacrifice, sarvagatam yajna pratishthitam, is the true, the Vedic knowledge. Meaning, see, there is so many practical implications. You give something to someone, you felt very fond, okay, you know, you have brought something, made food with lot of love and care, and the person looks at it and keeps it aside, or after eating says, oh, I wish you had put a little more of sugar or little less of salt, I don't know what all is put. So people feel low. I made with so much love and care and the person didn't appreciate. But if they had offered this food to the divine, Shobindu goes on to say, even if it is you give a gift to someone, give it to the divine in the person. Even if the person refuses it, rejects it, take away, I don't care, still the divine receives it. See how practical it is. Still the divine receives it, and he has noted in his diary, it is written, this was given to me. And it will go where it has to go. You, and why only material gifts? Love. You, if you give love to someone and the other person refuses, rejects, you feel jilted. Instead of that, well, I have not loved the person for the sake of the person, but for the sake of the divine presence within. If we live with this consciousness, we'll never feel sad, jilted, because the divine has received, and what will be the result? The power of love will grow in us. Immediate thing that will happen is. So this is what Sri Aurobindo is revealing to us, such practical thing. 119. That this is the sense of passage, of the passage is made clear in what follows by the affirmation of Lok Sangraha as the object of works, of Prakriti as the sole doer of works, and the divine Purusha as their equal upholder. So this teaching is expressed in different ways. Different people receive it differently, the same intuitive truth. For instance, when people say, I passed through this long back during my MBBS, I had heard a line, it had a great impact on me. It says, I passed through this world but once, but if I can leave it a better place, I would have done what little I could do. What a beautiful line this. Lok Sangraha. You're not using a Sanskrit word. But the same thing. If we can leave this world even a tad bit better, because just somebody passed through this world, the world breathed a little bit of relief and ease, just being, that's a divine work. To just be happy at one place, mother says, just to simply be happy, because you are reducing that much burden of the divine in creation. So when we live with this larger consciousness, this inner giving up of works and yet physical doing of them is the culmination of sacrifice. And by the affirmation that the result of such active sacrifice with an equal and desireless mind is liberation from the bondage of works, he who is satisfied with whatever gain comes to him and equal in failure and success is not bound even when he acts. When a man liberated, free from attachment, acts for sacrifice, all his action is dissolved. It means in all our life, people raise up children and sometimes they are very unhappy because the child does not turn out to be what they had imagined. They had poured all their life, all the energy into bringing up a child. I see these situations. Or a lady has loved her husband and, you know, the husband just walks away. Still, if we were to do it as a trustee, once a couple came to me on the verge of committing suicide because they had a daughter who was hyperactive, had lost her mind, only one daughter. So they were very disturbed by the whole thing. And I asked them only one question: if this daughter was not yours, but your brother's, and he, supposing he had died in an accident and you had to bring up, would you be unhappy or would you keep on trying your best? This immediately clicked. No, we would rather be happy that we are doing something for a brother. As you see, this is the difference. Because you hold on it to his as mine, and I want results. I want to see my daughter or son grow up into XYZ, that I am suffering. The moment I understand that this is what was given to me and I did what I could do, very simply, that should be your satisfaction, the joy of work. And if we can do it as an offering to the divine, then wonderful. So sometimes just to learn this lesson, life meets us with these challenges. Then what are the forms of sacrifice? And we have to remember, Brahman is the giving, Brahman is the food offering, by Brahman it is offered into the Brahman fire. Brahman is that which is to be attained by samadhi in Brahman action. So some people do this sloka before eating Brahmarparan, but they don't live this truth. To live it means everything is coming from the divine and everything is going to the divine. Not just to the belly god who is hungry. Otherwise, if we really live the truth, when we eat it, we will not say, after that sloka, we'll say, this is how it has been made. It has not been made so well. It is coming from Brahman. Imagine if actually God came and served us, would we even dare to say, God, you made this food with little bit of, there's a problem in the taste. The joy of receiving from the divine. So we have to live with this attitude. And how Sri Aurobindo lived this, when there was once he ate something which had no salt in it. And later on the disciple realized. And he asked Sri Aurobindo, sir, how did you like it? He said, yes, I enjoyed it. But sir, there was no salt in it. He says, but there is the ananda of saltlessness. Samam Brahman. That's how he could eat in prison, and he describes that lufsi three times a day as three forms of Brahman. And we know what he would have eaten. So then comes, what are the means of sacrifice, forms of sacrifice, page 121, maybe 10-11 lines below. The means of sacrifice are various. So what do I offer? Immediately we think of something material. Some offer their senses into the fires of control. When you control your senses, that's a sacrifice. Actually, the inner fire increases. We can actually feel the warmth, even heat, when we have not thrown it out or dispersed it. The fires increase. There is a subtle fire which increases. Of course, not with the mind dwelling upon the object and there is only a physical control out of fear. No, not that, but genuine control. There is the psychological sacrifice of self-control and self-discipline, which leads to the higher self-position and self-knowledge. So self-control is not an end in itself, but it is done for the sake of attaining the higher divine status. Some offer their senses into the fires of control, others offer the objects of sense into the fires of sense, and others offer all the actions of the sense and all the actions of the vital force into the fire of the yoga of self-control kindled by knowledge. So that means we should live content with whatever state the divine has kept us in. So how do we offer it? Not by closing the eyes and ears, but by opening them wide. When we look at objects, we should not look at it with lust and desire. I wish it is mine. But look at it that this too belongs to God and everything belongs to God. And that joy of yourself belonging to God. The moment the spirit of appropriation and possession comes, it spoils the play. So these are practical things which there is. That is to say, the discipline which receives the objects of sense perception without allowing the mind to be disturbed or affected by its sense activity. So it's not closing the senses. Receiving them and letting them pass to the divine. Every image, rather than, I wish it is mine. Normally that's how the sense mind reacts. And everything other than what we have, we want. What we have, never content. That's how it is put. The grass is greener on the other side. These senses themselves becoming pure fires of sacrifice. There is the discipline which stills the senses so that the soul in its purity may appear from behind the veil of mind action, calm and still. So stilling the senses, meaning thereby they are not getting disturbed. Oh my God, no. They are quiet, strong, nerves of steel. This too is sacrifice. It is, the fire has been kindled inside and things are going into it. The offering of the striver after perfection may be material and physical. What are the things you can offer? Dravya yagna. Mother says you can offer money. Or you can offer work. Or you can offer your life. You can offer your soul. Or you can offer everything. Thus offering may be material and physical. Dravya yagna. Those who cannot do anything else, it's okay. They have money, they are offering money. They should offer. This way they will at least participate in the yagya and receive the prasad. Because we should not think, oh, that person has offered so much money. It's good he has offered, it's good for him. That's what that Bangalore story, somebody said, but the Nepal Maharaja has given this whole building. I said, good for him. By putting his photograph here, you are actually going to belittle him. He said, how? I said, see, now because he did the offering to mother, he is having a contact of the, with the mother, and the mother is looking after him. Now if I put the photograph, that means he gave it to his ego. So the man was very perplexed. His relatives had come, brother or something. He said, okay. He didn't understand. I said, see, if I do that, then basically I am diminishing him. He has offered to the Divine Mother. It is between him and the mother. He said, what will happen to him? I said, he will get the delight of the Divine. You think it's something ordinary? With all your wealth, you cannot get it. So that is the spirit, Dravya Yagna. Like that consecrated in worship by the devotee to his deity. Or it may be the austerity of his self-discipline and energy of his soul directed to some high aim, tapo yagna, self-control, mastery, so that, you know, one strives for the highest. Or it may be some form of yoga like the pranayama of the Raj Yogins and Hatha Yogins or any other yoga. Yogi yagna, all these tend to the purification of the being. All sacrifice is a way toward the attainment of the highest. Because by doing it, we cancel the ego culture. Cancel culture. We cancel the ego culture. And in its place, we establish the divine. The one thing needful, the saving principle constant in all these variations, is to subordinate the lower activities to diminish the control of desire and replace it by a superior energy, to abandon the purely egoistic enjoyment for the diviner delight which comes by sacrifice. So that's where that famous phrase of the Isa Upanishad, tena tyaktena bhunjita maghrida kasya siddhana. Same thing, that we renounce, by renunciation you enjoy all. Why? Because when you want to enjoy in a limited way through a limited object, you will have a limited joy. But there is so much more. This delight which is pouring in creation, but we can't do it because we are so narrow. And that's why practical remedy when we are in depression. So why we are told, turn to the mother, read Savitri and you feel fine. So how does it work when we are in a state of depression? We are in a narrow hole of ego and egoism. Why am I depressed? Because something that I didn't like, some that happened. Something which I liked, wanted, worked for, that didn't happen. So ultimately it is me and mine. So the other day, me changes into ma. So just change of one letter. Hindi also same thing. Mai changes into ma. And what happens? Suddenly a door is unlocked and we are no more in that narrow hole of myself. So what happens? The moment you enter into vastness, there is delight. That's what people don't understand. At one point, when I was teaching in Bangalore, one day the sisters, nurses, students, they were going for a, community. They were sent to a community and they had got these ideas. Oh, they are so poor, bhuke nange log, etc. So they told me, sir, we are going there. I said, okay, tell me, give me an honest observation. When you come back, were they happy or not? They were going to a slum. So I said, sir, what a life it is. I said, you don't tell me what life that is. I have grown up in a very small, modest surroundings. You come back and tell me. Said, sir, they were happy. I said, exactly. We taught them that unless they have big material things, they will be unhappy. This is a civilizational disease. And many of us, I'm sure, I've grown up in a small house and we enjoyed like any. I don't have a single sad memory of my life. Growing up in a two-room house with a small, and small rooms and a small angan with a well from where you bring water. We never had all these taps, gadget, but not a moment I remember which was sad. Dad was engaged in prayers. He loved prayers, doing his work honestly, integrity. And the moment you learn that without this I can't be happy, who polluted this mind? Otherwise you can just be happy simply just to be. Why? Because then you are living in vastness. There were no cars to compete with. One of my cardiologist friend, he came and said, I am very stressed out. Why? Because when I am driving a car, I feel that the other car is going faster and I want to overtake. I get this, also the make of the car. So I said, what is there? You overtake the car. Why you are? No. Then there is the next car. I have seen people go for holiday to a resort because they are stressed out, depressed. They are playing tennis. Suddenly they have lost a game and they get depressed. There also it is, oh, I lost the game. So the narrower we are, selfishness, egoism makes us narrow. That brings unhappiness. The vaster we are, there is delight. This world is delight. Ego makes it, cuts us off from the world delight. And therefore we get our small share of joy and much more pain because there is so much we are missing out, which we don't understand. So when we live like a nomad, we are no mad. They who enjoy the nectar of immortality left over from the sacrifice attain to the eternal Brahman. This, not that forcibly we should not eat. Whatever you receive it as a gift. Joy. Know it to be coming from the divine. And whatever you give, it's going to the divine. Whether the person remembers it, gives you back, acknowledges it, this is none of your concern. But it's a life that has to be lived like that. That's how life becomes a sacrifice. And all these sacrifices extended in the mouth of the Brahman. What a beautiful image. All that we are offering through nature is ultimately going to the mouth of Brahman. He is receiving. That's the Vishwarupa of Sri Krishna, where he reminds Arjuna. See, every action, everybody, everything is coming into me and will go out from me. That's why he says, Nashto Moha, that I am no more deluded, because I now know that you are the origin and you are the end. But I should know that things are passing through me. I don't act as a middleman between God and creation, creator and creation. He is flowing through so many ways. Love, mother gave such a definition. See, these truths are so applicable universally. She says, what is love? See, love is not sexual intercourse. Love is not emotional anger. What is love? She says, it's a mighty vibration coming from the one and going to the one. It's just a channel. That's it. How beautiful life can be. And finally, last passage. But there are gradations in the range of these various forms of sacrifice. The physical offering, the lowest. When you give material things, it is the lowest. The sacrifice of knowledge, the highest. Knowledge is that in which all the action, this action culminates. That's why the knower who is a bhakta is regarded by the Gita as the highest of bhakta. He knows. And yet he continues to serve and do bhakti. He is not running away from the world that I know I have attained. Not any lower knowledge. Knowledge is that in which all this action culminates. Not any lower knowledge. We can say book knowledge. Even till date we don't understand. Other day I was hearing, you know, Ravan was a great jnani. He was not a jnani. He had read the books. There is a difference between reading the books and truly being a knower. So, but the highest self-knowledge and God-knowledge, that which we can learn from those who know the true principles of existence. that by possessing which we shall not fall again into the bewilderment of the mind's ignorance and into its bondage to mere sense knowledge and to the inferior activity of desires, of the desires and passions. What bewilders us? Senses. Oh, why this happened? Such a good person, why this happened? What bewilders us? The mind. If there is God, why this happened? But when you know the Brahman, you are not bewildered. You understand the world play. You see Krishna everywhere and in everything, and you live in that delight and peace. The knowledge in which all culminates is that by which thou shalt see all existences without exception in the self, then in me. When we reach this state, then we have arrived at the fullness of the sacrifice. But still we continue to act for Lok Sangrahart. That's what he has said. To him, next page, third line, he is God, the divine, the Purushottama. To him we offer everything as a sacrifice. Into his hands we give up our actions. In his existence we live and move, unified with him in our nature, and with all existence in him, we become one soul and one power of being with him and with all beings. This in his hands reminds me of someone who was narrating that when she went for the first time to see the mother, she was carrying some gift to be given to mother. And there was a friend who was also carrying something. This friend knew and she was going for the first time. She says when she went there, she didn't know what is the method. She handed it over to Champaklalji and kept it aside. This other lady kept her parcel in her hand. So after the mother finished with this lady, this other woman just extended it to the mother and the mother received it. He says, till date I feel, why didn't I do the same thing and give it directly to her? Why did I need to give it to someone? Not that it matters that way. Because you can give it to anyone and yet be in the consciousness that it is to the divine. Someone asked X that, you know, please communicate to mother that X was that Pulada, who looked electrical and all these departments. Tell the mother tomorrow, tell the mother right now because you have free access to her that somebody has passed away. It was night. He knocked at Pulada's window, you know, ashram is right from the outside, you can do that. And he said, okay, I'll tell her. Next morning, those people came there to meet the mother and they asked Pulada, did you tell? He said, yes, I told at the Samadhi. And he was very annoyed that, why didn't you go? You could have told her. And they go to the mother and mother says, yes, I know what has happened. So it does not mean that if you give it, know that it is ultimately going to the divine. And give it with that consciousness that it is the divine I am giving. So you'll have no expectation. People often say love without expectation, very difficult. Unless we understand it's not the person we are loving, but the divine in the person. Otherwise, to say that do without expectation is impossible for the human mind, which lives with egoism and for its own little pleasures. With his supreme reality, we identify and unite our self-being. By works done for sacrifice, eliminating desire, we arrive at knowledge and at the soul's possession of itself. Once again, we know who we are. By works done in self-knowledge and God-knowledge, we are liberated into the unity, peace, and joy of the divine existence. So we have the choice either to live for desires and swing between pleasure and pain, or live in the consciousness of the divine and be forever in peace and delight. Okay. Namaste.